and joining us this morning. Nice enough to be with us, Clayton McCullough, the Marlins manager. Skip, thank you so much. How you doing?
Oh, Joe, I'm doing okay. Always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Man, I appreciate it. There's so much to talk about. By the way, I know it's been rough the last couple, but what a June it's been overall, 10-4. And I'd like to get one, obviously, today and come home on a good note. But, you know, it's funny, watching Tyler Phillips, he got some nasty stuff, man. He got some stuff that drops, off the table. But he got off to the rough start. Looking at his stuff and where he is overall, he's pitched pretty well, but had a rough one last night. What do you see with him? Are you going to keep him in the rotation as you get healthier, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think right now we will plan to keep Tyler stretched out. He, as you mentioned, since the beginning of last year, Tyler's done really nothing but perform, and we've used him in a lot of, a variety of situations and roles, and we felt like, Joe, that you mentioned how nasty his stuff is. His arsenal, his pitches have gotten better. His split finger, he's got multiple breaking balls, multiple fastballs. So felt like that gave him a better chance to get some swing and miss and to take on both side hitters. And so I think last night just felt like it happens. You get off to, a bit of a tough start. You're not in rhythm out of the gates, fall behind some good hitters. So I think for me, that's more of a one-off. Tyler, he's done so well, and we still believe he has the stuff and ability to, start games or pitch, bulk outings in games. And as we look at things right now, we'll continue to do that.
Before we get to some good stuff, because you got some guys that flat out should be in the All-Star game, I'm going to talk about Eury Pérez. Is he close to coming back and getting back in the rotation for you?
Yeah, very encouraging. Eury responded very well to the treatments, shortly after he was put on the IL. He was able to keep throwing, got off the mound a couple times down in Jupiter, and he was up to 97, Joe, and felt great. So all signs pointed to him really trending well. So the plan now is that Eury will make a rehab start in Jacksonville this Thursday and hit roughly 3 innings and 50-ish pitches. And I think how he performs, how he feels in that rehab will determine next steps, whether that's another one in Jacksonville or potentially back with us.
Who makes that final decision? I'm just curious. Who goes and watches and makes the health decision on that?
I think, we have certainly trust in our medical group that is, there in Jacksonville. Gotcha. David Carpenter, our manager in Jacksonville. And with now every game's on television, you're getting reports on what the stuff is like. It'll be somewhat just how Eury physically being a big one, how he is able to, hold his stuff throughout now 50 pitches, how he feels after it, and collectively between, our coaching staff here, our medical group, our front office, then, decide and talk to the athlete and decide what we think would be, best next steps for him and us.
Let's talk about some good stuff. Otto Lopez, man, even when he slows down a little bit, he has just been unbelievable. A little bit of everything still. 98 hits in 73 games. He's hitting just a tad under 340 now, as good as he's been. And I'm not so sure he's the best player on the team now. Max Meyer is just, his confidence screams off my TV. 7-0, 95 strikeouts in the ERA under 3. How much has Max surprised you starting as in this rotation in the 3 spot and how good he's been?
Yeah, Max, we were not surprised by the ability to miss bats and thinking of him as a real bona fide starting pitcher. I think how he's, how he's performing, how consistent he's been over, you said, 15 some odd starts he's had this year has been a really pleasant surprise. I think one, Max is healthy. He's always been talented. Our group has helped him improve his arsenal. He's added, the sweeper's become a big pitch. It's been talked about a lot. His fastballs are a little bit better. And I think the big, Joe, watching him this year is just the different level of maturity within outings. I think in the past where some things can start to spiral on you on the mound and then you let it get away and you get out of the game and you're going, man, how did that – I had better stuff than 4 innings and 5 runs. And
right.
I think now, Max has the ability to just stay in the moment more, limit damage. And I think just his mentality has also been a big part of this turnaround.
Owen Casey and Jacob Marcy, your right fielder and center fielder, have made some unbelievable defensive plays. I don't know who's better watching Owen Casey jump over the fence and make a unbelievable at home, or Marcy's diving catch in right center that would have been three runs. The bases were loaded, saved the game right there in that one play. But at the with the bat right now, both hitting in the low 200s, you just stick. What are you doing on Nats where they don't lose confidence and they don't let things affect them in right and center field with the rest of their game as they're trying to get the bats going?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's hard. This is a tough league, and it can wear on you. Every single day, there's no let ups. If you look at the pitching we faced on this road trip, each day, it's tough, and you're going to scuffle. You're going to go through some tough stretches. I think, as you mentioned, their defense, and for young players to be able to separate the struggles at the plate at a given time and still go out there and defend and run the bases and be a good teammate. Like, those are great qualities. It shows a lot of toughness, and both of those guys have that. So I think times like this, you're buying the character, you're buying the person and the belief in that they'll get out of this because they're talented, and they're showing you some real resilience and grit by, being able to still, do some things to help us win games, even when, you go through a period of some struggles offensively.
Kyle Stowers playing first base a little bit now. What was behind that move? So used to seeing him out in left field.
Yeah, so this was something I spoke with Kyle, and he and I called up in November of the off season, and I just put it on his radar. Nothing that, hey, we're looking to make a permanent move, but just with, you never know what the state of the roster is going to look like at a given time. And we felt like, Kyle has a skill set that maybe could transition over to first. And, Kyle being the guy he is was open to it. And so it was as much, again, think Kyle could do it. It for him as a player, it gives him some versatility to be able to do more, which is attractive. And for myself as the manager, being able now to, not be pinned down as much when certain guys are playing well, or depending on the health of our roster and, who we have as far as trying to put out what's the best, I think, lineup that day or within a game, Joe, as we're making moves and pinch hitting and doing things, that the more guys that can go different places, it just, the optionality is nice. So Kyle has really taken to it well. And again, moving forward, how much he plays there compared to the outfield, I think we'll just have to see based on, again, on, what the roster looks like and how guys are performing.
I always wondered, going back when I was a kid, the guy that played first base was a slow kid or the bigger kid that kind of stuck him over there and just catch the ball when we throw it to you. There's a lot to that. How difficult is that move going from outfield? I know we've had third baseman also play first base, but to get used to that and digging the ball out of the ground and coming in on to get it, and when to cover first and when to go get the ball and pitch it to the pitcher coming over. It just seems like a lot to just throw somebody in there like that.
Yeah, it's much more of a nuanced position than I think the people give it credit for. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of decision-making over there, which balls to go for and, handling all kinds of throws coming your way. And Kyle has, he's taken to it well. And some of those types of plays, Joe, we can only replicate so much in a practice setting, and they're just going to come up in games. But he's got Xavier Edwards beside him, has such high baseball IQ that I think Xavier within games is also able to communicate with Kyle. And, you try to anticipate what might be coming up and kind of let him know, hey, if it's here, just go to the bag and I'll take it. So having someone beside him that has great feel, I think, helps the learning curve as well.
I love Joe Mack, by the way. Joe Mack, you're a little extra too defensively with him, don't you? Throwing guys out. And is he pretty much what you thought he would be? I know you had to make a tough decision there when you had to decide who was going down and who was staying on the big squad. Joe Mack been what you thought he'd be since he's been up?
Yeah, I think everyone in our organization believed highly in the defensive potential Joe had. And we had seen it some in spring training. And with it, you never know how a young player is going to handle, their initial few weeks, first month in the major leagues, especially at a position that's as demanding as that now, where you're catching these guys really for the first time. And, the moments are a little bigger. And Joe has he's really, really done great. He's shored things up for us behind the plate, especially the ability to control the running game, some of the throws he's made, it's made a difference.
Yeah.
And I think we were expecting that, but you're never really sure. And I think in some ways he's even performed better behind the plate than maybe we thought he would right out of the gates.
Clayton, do they keep you updated on like guys that are about ready to come up? Like, hey, this guy's chewing up, he's tearing up Triple A or Double A. We got to make a move. He's ready. Do you get those kind of calls, and how do you go about that? Are there meetings about that every day, or just when you think you need to have them because somebody might be struggling?
Yeah, I feel like I have a really great relationship with our front office. You know, with Peter and Gabe Kapler. So, I mean, we're in contact daily. And, you know, whether, you know, we're at home or here on the road. And I think those are just conversations that are kind of come up organically and naturally. Generally, the pitching is the one you talk about the most. Just, hey, if we're getting in the need for someone, who might it be? What are we looking for? And then the position player front. Yeah, we do. I think it's a combination of how certain players maybe are performing down in Jacksonville. And are they warranting the potential opportunity here? You know, compared to how guys are doing. So yeah, I don't have like a daily like sheet of paper that, you know, is box scores, but we talk about players a lot, and we have an internal system that tracks, you know, our players, and, you know, able to get on there and scroll and try to keep myself up to speed as best I can.
All right. 105 start today, and Sandy Alcantara back on the mound. Talk about Sandy, man. You know, he's stable. First of all, he's always wanted to be here through the good and the bad, and he's had some outstanding outings. Where is he right now pitching for you?
Sandy's been on a really good run. I think, you know, his last three, he's, like you said, there were consistency. I mean, I think most, you know, you go into a game, I do feel like, you know, Sandy's going to get you, you know, six plus innings, and he's going to keep you in the game and give you a chance to win. So, I mean, that's a really relieving feeling for myself. And so a lot gets thrust on his shoulders and has been for a number of years, but I think that's what makes him so special is he understands his importance to our rotation and our team. He doesn't shy away from a challenge. And yeah, today, it's a big one only. Yeah, we've lost a couple in a row. We'd love to get out of here and kind of, you know, salvage the series and get home on a good note. And no one better than to have Sandy on the mound. And he's been throwing the ball very well, you know, his last three, four starts. So in a good place right now, and anticipate he has a good one today.
He got day off tomorrow, and then the Giants come in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, followed by the Rangers Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Got a lot of great stuff going on. Hey, thank you as always, man. I appreciate you adjusting your schedule to come on this morning. I really do, Clayton. Thank you.
Of course, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Clayton McCall, Marlins manager, joining us. Talk a little bit about the team. Got to get some bats going. Got to get some bats going, man. And sometimes you struggle at the plate. It affects your play. But some of those guys defensively have been really good in the outfield. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, remember Tim Raines?
Yeah.
No ear flaps. He was the last guy with that. When he was on the Marlins, he had Tim Raines would rock the no ear flaps. I thought that was so cool.
Was he an Orioles guy for a long time?
Was he on the? I always remember him on the Expos, Tim Rock Raines. You might be right though. I think he played for a bunch of teams. But yeah, you were talking about hit streaks going on.
Yeah.
And I always just say, yeah, I remember Tim Raines in that last game when they were trying to get him to 36 games in
a row.
Wasn't
Tim Raines a base dealer too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He played for the Orioles for a year.
Okay. It's hard for me because when I was younger, let's keep in mind, Leroy didn't have baseball.
I got you.
So
I got you. Would you have the Zephyrs? In New Orleans?
Yeah, we had the Zephyrs. Mm. I remember a guy getting hit. I went to a baseball game. I remember Whitehead got hit in the face with a baseball, I think.
Jeez, really?
Back right up the middle. Boom.
Dude, I remember that dead. When that happened to Stanton, when he got hit in the face.
Yeah.
And then the dude hit, I think the guy was from down here. I think his name was Mike Fiers. And then he hit another guy. Man, Tommy Hutton was furious. Let's go out to the Toyota of Hollywood guest line. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location. Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com. The voice of your Miami Marlins. Excellent job calling the games this year right here on WQAM. Jack McMullen joining us there on the program from Philly. What's going on, man? How are you?
How are we doing? Tim Raines, Montreal Expo and Chicago White Sox. He was a White Sox for 5 White Sox. Years there,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Yeah, well done. Yes.
That's it. Keep in mind, baseball for me as a kid, and I grew up with Will Clark. So knew his family and played in same little league fields or whatever. But that was it. I mean, I had a couple of guys who went to my high school that I think one guy's a scout or he's in the front office, and that's Ronald Marini. But other than that, baseball in New Orleans was not, like, big.
Now, do I have this right? Did Will Clark and Palmeiro play together in college? Like, isn't that, like, the best college baseball tandem we've ever seen?
Well, how about this one? I took my recruit trip to LSU. I was going to play baseball also. And my my guide was Albert Bell. But back then, it was Joey Bell. Yeah. So, yeah, they had a pretty good baseball team. But, yeah, it. Will Clark was, I mean, we remember him at the park. We'd be playing at the park, and his dad would be throwing bat in practice. And they did it forever.
Jack, is it awesome. is it a crime if Otto Lopez is not an all-star this year?
Absolutely. I personally, like, listen, tons of bias baked into this take, but I think it's a crime if he's not starting at shortstop for the National League. But obviously, you know, that's a fan vote, and we can continue to help out. Marlins.com/votes. There's your plug this morning. But no, I mean, I think it's criminal if he's not going to the All-Star game. You have to think he's a shoe-in to be a reserve, but I would love to see this guy start. Any way you look at this argument, he's the best shortstop in the National League right now that's fully healthy. I can hear the argument for Ellie De La Cruz in Cincinnati if De La Cruz was not dealing with a hamstring thing for the last month. He's missed a month. Otto's playing every day. It seems like he's got a multi-hit day every day. I was doing this yesterday. I mean, this guy's played like 72 games, I think 30 multi-hit days, and 14 with no hits. Like, he has more multi-hit days than zero-hit days. Right. And he's playing good defense now. I know he was a little shaky in the first month of the year or so, but Otto Lopez, to me, is the most complete package at shortstop in the National League right now.
The Marlins could have two, maybe three All-Stars. Is that Max Myers? And...
maybe Edwards.
Maybe I mean, Edwards.
What would you think? You think if like what's realistic as far as reps to have? Because they've been playing such great baseball. That's going to get you some good buzz going into all this. But realistically, what do you think? I mean, Otto's probably the most obvious. But if somebody was to join him, who do you think it would be, Jack?
I think it'd be Meyer. Based on how Meyer has thrown the last bit, like it's 15 starts without a loss. He's the only qualified pitcher in baseball with a zero in the loss column. So he's also thrown to a mid-2 ZRA. I think the conservative guess is 2. My realistic guess is 3. You get one of Hicks or Edwards there, and then my like bullish hope would be 4, where you get Otto, Meyer, Hicks, and Edwards all to Philadelphia. It's tough. And the Hicks one, like he's top 5 in Major League Baseball in RBIs. But, I mean, you've got a couple of guys like Baldwin is coming off the shelf right now. And Baldwin in Atlanta is going to be getting a fan vote, it seems like. And then Hunter Goodman in Colorado has 20 homers. So it just seems like that catcher situation could be kind of pushing Hicks out of that conversation. But Liam can get hot in a blink. And then Edwards, like it's really good. Second base in the National League right now. You got Terang. You got Lau in Pittsburgh. So there's some competition there, but you have to think Meyer and Lopez are headed to Philly.
What do you make of this month so far? Because I think the thing I found impressive about it is these guys got a lot of adversity thrown in their face with the pitching injuries. And, man, they really haven't batted eye. That would have been an easy place for them to really fold up, and they haven't. So, I guess, what have you found to be the reason or just mindset of this team that they – when they face losing Eury and they lost Jansen Junk and they're having to go with bullpen guys and Tyler Phillips is a step up, like to be in this spot, I think is pretty damn impressive right now.
Yeah, to be honest with you, dude, like I told Steven during Marlins on Deck yesterday, he asked, you know, is this the way you thought the wins could come together over the course of 12, 13 games? And I said, no, honestly, I didn't think so. If you were to tell me that at the end of May, you were going to lose Eury Pérez and Junk, and you were going to be down to 2.5 starting pitchers, like Tyler Phillips is still in his buildup, mm-hmm. I would have said, okay, they're not going to have the best staff ERA in baseball over the course of 3 weeks in June, or 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever it has been. Allegedly, today's June 16th, so that's 2.5 weeks in this month so far. But That's a good tally on the calendar like for me. But yeah, I mean, listen, they're the best pitching staff in baseball this month. And I was not expecting that when you're relying on Sandy and Meyer. And then, I don't know, we'll see in the rotation. But Tyler Phillips has been awesome. I know Gusto had a rough one last night, but Gusto was really good against Arizona last week, too. And then these bullpen days, man, they're working. The bullpen is becoming one of the more underrated bullpens in Major League Baseball. And I think Clayton McCullough deserves a heck ton of credit for just putting the right guys on the mound at the right time. Like, it's always the right time for Michael Peterson when you see him come in. It seems like it's always the right time for Bender when he comes in. And then you're going to go Fairbanks in the ninth, and Fairbanks has looked better over his last couple of outings. So it's been fun to watch them pitch their way to this, because I thought if they were going to win 10 of 12 or 10 of 13, they were going to hit their way to that. But they're pitching their way to that.
Right. I got
to
tell you, I owe Clayton McCullough an apology, because I was getting irritated by how he was snatching pitchers in and out and changing pitchers. And like, we would come in the next day and go, what is he doing? He had 70 pitches. And
we may have had some prop bets too that have been
but when you see it, like, he's making, and I think this is part of when a manager has success, right? It seems like everything he does, it works. I think I sometimes get annoyed because, you know, they always mention the word I hate. And I guess I'm old school, just watching a manager smoke a cigar and have a gut feeling. But analytics, right? Lefty, righty, this, that, that. If you're a good pitcher, does it matter? Like, let's go.
Yeah. You know, I will tell you, and I've long had this thought, that umpires are a lot like offensive linemen, where the best umpires in baseball are the ones you never talk about. Right? Like, you've got a great left guard. Like, the reason the left guard for, you know, I'm thinking of Quentin Nelson right now. Like, there's a reason he got $60 million or $80 million, because nobody talks about him over the course of 60 minutes. And then you realize, oh, wait, he didn't allow a single pressure. Like, that's kind of how I feel about managers right now, where it's like the best ones are the ones you don't talk about. And it's funny because it fits with the captain goes down with his ship cliche, where it's like, when you're on this downswing, everybody wants to point a finger at somebody. And then when things are going well, it's like, oh, but look at all the players performing right now. It's like, sometimes they're hitting the right buttons too, and it's fun. You know, it's cool because the Marlins are very new school, analytically driven. But there is also plenty of gut feel. I can attest to that firsthand. I know Clayton McCullough has this thought out internally, and he's making quick decisions in the midst of games. And I think that guy does a heck of a job, and really excited that he's, you know, kind of getting this hot run of form from the fish right now.
So I heard you guys talking about this a little bit on the broadcast yesterday with Tyler Phillips. So he is ditching the slapping, and he has a new method. Can you, because we've been talking about this for a little bit since he's moved to the starting lineup.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, what is he going to keep when he's doing it?
He's abandoning the slap?
Yeah, it was a little bit of like trial and error for him, I guess, or just figuring out what works best for him, because he was slapping and coming out of the bullpen for his first start, and then he was slapping and coming out of the dugout, and they were like, hey, we'd prefer if he came out of the dugout, but you can't slap every inning. Like, that was kind of a Phillips prerogative. He was like, if I slap every inning, I'm going to be concussed by the end. So, because, like, they're real slaps. I thought at the beginning when he started doing that, like midway through last year, I was like, oh, this is a bit. And then you would zoom in on his face, and you see, like, a red handprint. I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's actually doing this right now, huh? Now I don't think he's doing that, but it's classified info. Like, he's got this poster and he doesn't want to share with the media. And he looks at, like, this poster when there are two outs in the half inning, when he's going to go back out. So I guess he's just finding a way to flip the switch. I don't know what that is, but allegedly it's not slapping himself in the face anymore. It's this poster hanging in the tunnel.
Oh, so it's right in the tunnel. I was about to ask you, I was like, where is this? Does he have a binder? Like, what the hell?
You know, somebody's going to find out what that poster is.
Well, of course.
Somebody
stumble in. I got to go to the bathroom, take a photo. Yeah.
We got to figure this out. Like, what is this? I love a guy who's got strange quirks and ticks, but that is something. Like, look, he's been impressive. I think that's the thing, is you got to. It's such a different thing. You got to amp yourself up, and you have this wrestling persona, but then you have to cruise through a game where there's more ebbs and flows. There's got to be a different adjustment for him.
Yeah, 100%, man. And, like, I think what he's trying to do is, get it a little subdued. Like Daniel Moskis, the Marlin pitching coach, mentioned to him, he would like him to effectively clock in and clock out for each half inning, where it's like you're not, you know, pent up and angry the entire time. Right. You can do that when you're throwing an inning or two, but when you're throwing five, it's just like not a good way to live. But there are guys that, you know, can kind of tap into that over the course of their start. And like I think about Skeens in Pittsburgh. Paul Skeens, I remember his rookie year and even last year, was ripping like shots of honey in between every half inning. Like he was just keeping the sugar up. Like there are things that you can do. And some of it could be placebo effect, but at the end of the day, man, like he's going to figure out what makes him tick over the course of a start. And he's up to 80 pitches and he's looked really darn good doing it too.
You got any weird superstitions like during a season? Are you keeping anything? So, like as a broadcaster, you keeping the mojo going? You got anything going on?
So total broadcast dork thing for you here. So we've got 162 games. Last year, I probably did it like 100 times. This year, I'll probably do it like 80 times. But whenever I feel like I don't have all of it there vocally, I take two Hall's cherry cough drops and I put them in like a plastic bottle of water, shake it up, dissolve it. And between every half inning, I take a little sip and it's like you're drinking a cough drop. And that's what I got for you.
Is it uncouth these days? Like back in the day, you know, you had these guys who would just rip shots, you know, like the whiskey would keep the voice strong. Like as coming up as a young broadcaster, did they take that out of the game? Like, you know, Bob Uecker style where you're sitting there with the bottle because you just, you know, like it's just old school mentality baseball. I mean, no one's ripping cigarettes in the clubhouse anymore. But like, is that beaten out of broadcasters these days?
Yes, and I won't say unfortunately or fortunately, but after this, I'll put together a list of everybody that I would get in trouble with if I did that, and I'll shoot it your way. But I would assume some of them would be the Odyssey people. It's like, we can't have this happening right now. But you know what? Talk to me in 50 years, and we'll see if the Harry Carey cycle comes back in baseball. Bunt is coming back, so why can't the beer in the booth come back?
It does do good for your voice though. Like I had my buddy, we were doing a weigh-in for fighting, and he was really like freaking out about his voice, and he's like doing the tea and all this type of, and I have this mentality, Jack, tea sucks, all right? Nobody likes tea, you know. You just do it as like a professional thing, you think it helps your voice. But I told him, I'm like,
hot toddy, baby,
I'm telling you, dude, hot toddy. I told him, I said, hey, you're going up there, you got to get this crowd ready for this weigh-in, go rip a shot of whiskey beforehand and you're going to be good. And he goes, my God, that worked. I'm like, of course it works. Sometimes the old school method works.
Hot toddy.
Heck yeah, man.
Hot toddy. My grandmother, we used to go over to my grandmother's house with the cough all the time. She'd say, what's wrong? I said, something about the old baby. Let me make you a hot toddy. She put the honey, the shot of Jack, squeeze a lemon. And we're like, yeah, hot toddy.
And all of a sudden, everything feels good, right?
Oh,
it's not just the throat.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that little headache is gone and all that. I hear you.
What do you?
Your throat is coated real nice with the honey. Oh, perfect.
What are you binging on the road? Like, what do you? What is the go to entertainment for yourself when you're trying to wind down from baseball? Are you watching that Love Island? What do you got going on?
So my fiance, lives in Pittsburgh. She's in a residency program. So it was nice when the team flew from Pittsburgh to Philly. I stayed back. I just spent that extra night there, and we watched Love Island. And I was just trying to get. I was trying to get my feel for each of the characters, and I feel weird calling them characters because they're there for the right reasons and they're there for love. Until a hot new bombshell.
I don't know about Kenzie.
No, they're really there for love.
I don't think Kenzie's there for love. She doesn't seem like she's
Kenzie
there for love.
Doesn't seem like she's there for love. You know who really grinded my gears was Corbin. I can't figure out his vibe, man.
Nobody can. Nobody. He seems like AI. He doesn't seem like a real human. You know?
Yeah, so my fiance called him ChatGP Corbin.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of fun.
No, so, it is. It's crazy. Is the players watching Love Island? Is this a buzz among some of them? Are they all trying to catch it on the road?
I'll ask. You know, I know a couple of them were watching Euphoria as that came to a close, and I was watching Euphoria. I grinded that, and it was like ripping the Band-Aid off. Seasons 1 and 2 I thought were really good, and then season 3 it was
terrible.
Like, this is awful, but I'm glad it's over.
I didn't even watch the ending. Didn't even watch the ending.
Do it for the sake of doing it, but you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
See, you guys watch fake stuff. I watch every season of Game of Thrones during the pandemic.
Yeah,
about a month.
He's very excited to watch House of Dragon.
House of Dragon starts Sunday.
Okay. That, I've heard nothing but great things. I haven't tried it before.
You haven't? You watch Game of Thrones? No,
I haven't tried it before. But I swore, I've heard awesome stuff.
Jack, I swore that I would not watch a show that didn't have electricity. I'm serious. This wasn't a bit.
What a weird box to show ass to Jack.
This was not a bit. I was serious. So they go, hey, you know, we're at home. We're doing the show from home, and you got all day. You can't go anywhere because of COVID. So I said, let me kick the tires on it. Right? I got hooked. So I watched that. I watched all. I'm hooked.
Crazy. Good for you. My COVID was a Tiger King, Joe Exotic.
We did that.
Of course, it started down
here. The mauling of the employee to, I'm never going to financially recover from this. That's right? One of the best
moments in history. What do you think? They go into this cage with these tigers and, oh, nice kitty. And then, what do you think is going to happen?
Insurance is going to suck.
Catch Jack McMullen on the call tonight. Marlins and Phillies, game two of their series, 6:40. Steven Strom will get you ready with Marlins on deck tonight at 6. And you can listen to that right here on WQM. Jack, appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jack.
No, appreciate you guys.
Let's talk with Steven Strom on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Steven Strom hosts Marlins on Deck before every Marlins game right here on WQAM. You've got one tonight. Marlins begin a series in Philadelphia tonight. They get Zach Wheeler for the Phillies and Ryan Gusto for the Fish. And there he is in all his glory in Philadelphia in the press box. What's up, Strom?
Boys, life is good right now. 10-2 to start the month of June. I don't know what it is about this month. Last year they kind of did the same thing, but here we are at 500, looking to get back over 500 for the first time since the end of April. Boys are playing really good baseball. They're pitching particularly really well, but there is a collective cohesiveness that you could feel the energy in that clubhouse.
Did you have any inclination that we'd see something like this after May? Because May felt deflating, you know? It was like they were in it, and then all of a sudden everything kind of just went to pieces. And now, like you say, they're back to 500. They're the hottest team in baseball. Did you sense that there might be something like this coming?
I did, but I sensed it in a different way. I thought that someone like Jacob Marcy would have a 350 month. I thought that Kyle Stowers would go through a power surge. I mean, that would have been the avenue for me to think that the Marlins were to rip off this win streak and just this stretch of baseball. But they've done it through pitching. And the reason why I probably would tell you yes is because, and I don't know if every manager is probably supposed to say this, but Clayton just kept saying, we're close. And it's like, we're 8 games under. Like, how many times are you going to keep saying that we're close? But he was right. And it's been in a different way. It's happened after 2 big injuries in the starting rotation with Yuri Perez and Jansen Junk. But sometimes, and I'm sure Crowder can speak to this, on a team, when 2 key guys go down, you either sink or you swim, and people start to pull their weight. And I feel like the Marlins have collectively done that together, and they've almost bonded over this, first, 15 days of the month of June.
And yeah, a lot of times that happens when good players go down. Somebody has to step up, and people kind of galvanize around that. Like, hey, bro, he's out. We need something. So, the support is there. With the pitching rotation, Josh was telling us earlier, he was like, the bullpen is, the stat-wise, they're one of the best teams, and they're just coming up. I was watching the game, and it was like 4 pitchers in 6 innings or something like that. Like, what Clayton McCullough's doing it's working, right? When he's pulling the pitchers and it's just working through the rotation.
So those bullpen games that you're talking about, we're getting those almost 2 times a week right now. Sandy's been awesome. Max Meyer's been awesome. I'm forgetting one more guy right now. But, guys like Ryan Gusto, Tyler Phillips right now, they're going 4 innings, 3 innings, and we'll see how long Gusto goes today. But, if you ask managers around the league, if they could do bullpen games every day, if their pitchers were robots, they would do it because you could just play the matchup game and you can look at the numbers and go left on left and do all that kind of jazz. But, Clayton McCullough deserves a ton of credit during this stretch. It's difficult. It's a delicate game, the bullpen game. I mean, Josh, you know this too. Like, you go with an opener, and it's like, I feel really good about this. We call it a pocket. and you give up, you know, a couple of runs, I mean, you're deflated. You know, you got to look to the bullpen. Now you have to change the way you think. Instead of having like a scripted, here's who I want to go to for here, the score will dictate kind of where you turn. But I think Clayton deserves a ton of credit how he has managed this, again, with two guys out in Yuri and Jansen Junk.
Steven, mentioned this stat throughout the show, but the Marlins are the only team in baseball to win games started by Shohei Ohtani, Jacob Mizorowski, and now Paul Skenes this season. You brought up how they're still kind of waiting for Kyle Stowers and Jacob Marcy to really get going to the form that we saw when they were at their height last season. How has this lineup been able to do it? Obviously, Eriberto Hernandez has come on really strong as of late, and the other three guys who have been the main factors in this lineup, and when they were going, you know, Liam Hicks and the two guys in the middle infield, Xavier Edwards and Otto Lopez, they've been fantastic. But how has this lineup been able to do it against the game's best pitchers?
Yeah, you hit on it. I mean, Eriberto Hernandez in the month of June hitting .333. He's got an 1,000 OPS. He's hit four long balls, and he's done it in big-time situations. And it started in the middle of May against Tampa. He came in a pinch-hit situation. I'll start with Bert. I'll move down, and you hit on this, and you are right, hit it on the head. Joe Mack has completely changed the tenor of the defense, and him hitting now is just like a bonus. He's hitting .312 with two home runs and a .900 OPS this month, but it's the defense, man. The defense is sensational. He's throwing guys out at a high clip. He's baiting these runners. He's like, he wants to, you know, throw it, you know, slow back to the pitcher. Yeah, I'm not, maybe I'm sleepwalking. No, boom, bam, out at second base. He's been awesome that way. I know Jeff Nelson, who's been doing the games, he's been so complimentary of the way that Joe Mack, you know, is so athletic back there. He moves the glove. He moves around back there to make sure his pitchers know where the target is. I mean, it's been night and day with Joe Mack, and now you're starting to see the cement dry with him up here. The defense has been a lot better, which then coincides with the pitchers being more confident throwing breaking balls, which coincides with guys not stealing bases, pitch counts lower. So it has started to me with Joe Mack. His defense and the domino effect is telling.
Who would you have as a we had this conversation in the last segment. Josh was saying there's probably four guys I could put on the All-Star team. I'm going to make it one, though, because the Marlins generally are stuck with one. You have to put one Marlin right now on the All-Star roster. Who would it be for you?
Otto Lopez. Otto Lopez has just been... He's been out of this world. It's not even like, wow, he's going through like a really hot stretch. It's just he's having one of the best seasons that a Marlins infielder has like ever had. He's doing it at the plate. He's doing it, you know, at shortstop. He runs the base as well. He posts every single day. The contact ability, I mean, what is the guy hitting .340? I mean, it's unbelievable. When batting average is so like extinct, he's leading the league in hits. Otto Lopez, to me, deserves to be right here in Philadelphia.
And with the home run, he's talking about the power, Kyle Stiers and all them guys, and seeing it, they're 28 out of 30 in home runs in the league, but they're hitting gaps and they're getting on base. Is that sustainable? Just let's move the runners, let's get it around, or do they need some power to really make a run?
Ask the Brewers. Brewers are the same way. Brewers are they might be last in all of baseball in home runs, but they run the bases well. They don't punch out. They walk. They make a lot of contact. They play good defense. Like, doing the little things, guys, it matters. If you can do it at a high level, and the Brewers do it at a high level every single year, and that's why they're at the top of the NL Central every single year. I mean, the Brewers are doing, like, historic things from just an offensive standpoint in these wins. Like, they are not hitting home runs. They are just generating offense through their speed, through their ability to put the ball in play, put pressure on the defense, and that is when you talk to the opposition's managers, you don't want to play the Marlins right now because they just put so much pressure on you. They don't strike out. They put the ball in play. They walk. They do all these little things. Look, slug is great. And, like, yes, when you get the three-run home run, that's usually the magic thing in the game of baseball. But my thing is this, guys. Like, the Marlins are 10-2, and I don't think their offense has been, like, that great. I really don't. Like, it's been good. It's been timely. But the ERA sits at 2.52 as a team in June. The next ERA on that list is Detroit at 3.43. So we're talking about a whole run here that is next in place since the beginning of June. It starts with the pitching, and I think that's the reason why, you know, the Marlins sit at 500 right now.
If you're concerned, Crowder, about the lack of ding-dongs, I've got a couple guys in mind that they could certainly call up.
If you say De Los Santos, I'm leaving the stream.
De Los Santos, yeah, Matt Mervis is available. He's in the Mexican League. I'm just saying if power is a concern, they do have some options.
I'm drinking my cherry tart. You guys can take it from here.
Strom, don't worry. Hawk is going to get a cameo from Danhausen.
Yeah.
Get Danhausen to uncurse Davis and De Los Santos. So it'll be okay.
And Mervis.
Sorry.
I mean, you saw what he did for the Knicks and for the Carolina Hurricanes. I imagine he could do that. You know, I mean, those are whole teams. I'm just asking for two guys to be uncursed.
Ridiculous.
I'm just not commenting. If we're 2-10 and you want to bring up De Los Santos, you know what, man? Fine. I'll look into the numbers.
About a lack of power. I mean, I'm listening to what Crowder says and pop right into my head if you're concerned.
Crowder, what
about
is that Angels hat? Why are you wearing that?
It just matches my Panther shirt. I just match colors. Yeah, I don't really care what it is.
Looks good.
It's ridiculous. Huge Reggie Jackson fan though, and Rod Carew loves them both. Can you name any Angels? Old Angels, Crowder.
Ooh, Reggie Davis, Rod Carew.
Reggie Jackson.
Oh, okay. Davis.
Reggie Davis used to wash cars at $7.90 the ticket.
Oh, that's the Reggie Davis I love. He was an Angels fan.
Scott Spezio.
Nice. How many cheesesteaks will you throw down? You have 3 days in Philadelphia. How many cheesesteaks will you throw down, Strom?
It's funny. The first thing that Jack and I did when we got to the stadium, the best cheesesteak, you probably have heard this before, lives within the confines of Citizens Bank Park. It is the visitor clubhouse that has the best cheesesteaks in Philadelphia. I think I'm going to take one on Tuesday night. Jack already ordered his for tonight. So, and Nelly was asking, actually, when he came in here, he's like, is anyone ordering cheesesteaks? And I'm like, yeah, we'll get you one. This cheesesteak here is ridiculous.
Do they bring it in from somewhere? Or they make it themselves
there? No, they make it homemade. You order it. So you go in there and you say, hey, you know, so-and-so, you know, I'm going to pick up my cheesesteak after my pregame show. So, you know, whatever. What's today's game? 6:40? 6:35, that cheesesteak better be ready. I go down, get the cheesesteak. It's right there. You're supposed to Venmo. You're supposed to tip. I always do that. So, you know, you pick it up and you go and you take it back to the booth. It's great. It's great.
With Wiz? You get it with Wiz?
I get it with just like provolone. I don't do the Wiz. I'm not a Wiz guy. And I like my buns toasted. Yeah.
What about onions, mushrooms, peppers?
Onions and mushrooms. I don't like peps.
Interesting. Now, I'm a purist when it comes to cheesesteaks. You know, my wife is from Philly, so I've learned this over the years. I go cheesesteak with Wiz, no onions, no mushrooms, no peppers. Just give me the cheese and the meat. But here's the hack.
Go
ahead. Make sure no one's listening. Ketchup.
Oh.
Ketchup all over that bad boy.
I agree. You like mayo on that too? A little Russian sauce?
No, I don't want to hear these noises out of you guys. You guys worry about Matt Mervis and Davis and De Los Santos. Steven Strom and I are having an adult conversation. No, of course
I like
you do.
I like ketchup and mayo on my cheesesteaks.
Never done mayo. Interesting.
Disgusting. Good.
Thoughts,
no,
Josh?
It kind of makes sense. No. It's beef, no. So it's like, you know, I always say the burger, it's beef and bread, so it should kind of be what you can line up a hamburger to.
Yeah, you got to go Wiz, though, because you're in Philly.
No, I mean, Wiz, that's the nastiest thing in the world is cheese.
But that's why cheesesteaks are on the map in Philadelphia.
Because of Cheese Wiz?
Yeah, that's what makes it different.
No, you
don't get that anywhere else.
That's terrible.
Well, you don't understand good food. I don't know what to tell you. All right. I think I'm out of stuff. I know Strom's got to go. Strom had a hard out this afternoon, so I don't want to keep him overtime. Go ahead, Josh, real quick.
I want to ask you if you could just go in a little bit deeper about Max Meyer, because they're on this insane streak right now when he starts games. 15 starts. They haven't lost yet. He's 7-0. He has arguably been, you know, besides the Miz, probably top three pitcher in the National League, maybe in all of baseball this season. he's staying healthy. That's probably the biggest thing. But what's maybe the biggest change that you've seen in Meyer's game this season?
I'll give you a couple. I'll get all nerdy on you. I will tell you that he changed his arm angle a little bit more over the top, so he's able to get a lot more carry on his fastball. Like, we've talked about the secondary stuff with Meyer. The slider's always been lethal. It's just always been about another pitch, and he kind of mixed around with a cutter. This year, he has experimented with the sinker and just a four-seam. And because he has raised his arm angle a little bit higher, he's getting carry on the ball. So the fastball has really helped him out. And then the additional secondary pitch was the sweeper. Those two pitches are just, I mean, opponents can't do anything against it. I mean, they're hitting in the low hundreds against the sweeper and the slider. And then I would tell you the other thing is he mixes so well with Daniel Moskis. Daniel Moskis and him just have such a great relationship. And look, Max has always had the qualities to be, like, I think a really good three or two in your starting rotation. He's just having one of those seasons where everything is being put together. It's very similar to what we saw with Cabrera last year. I think this version is a little bit better. But, yeah, Max Meyer, I mean, man, he has just been incredible. We probably don't talk about him enough because he pitches every fifth day. Otto X and Hicks, they've been awesome. But, like, there's a legitimate chance that Max Meyer is here in Philadelphia as well.
It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale. One location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com, Joe.
All right, Woody, thank you so much. And a longtime friend, Craig Mish, Sports Grid host and pre- and post-game for the Marlins TV, joins us this morning as they get set for six games at home. And, boy, what a good month. I know a couple of tough ones where you got beat up pretty good with the Phillies, but 11-4 in the month of June. And tonight, another chance to get back to .500, Craig, as we say good morning to you. How you doing?
Good morning, Joe. Yeah, your old friends in the Bay Area are here this weekend. They're
struggling.
Not playing great baseball. Yeah, they're not playing great baseball. They did surprisingly take care of Atlanta, but – yeah, they're not playing great this year. Very big disappointing team, I would say, in the National League. And the Marlins, you know, certainly in June have been great. And so that's put them in a better position.
All right, so I'm gonna jump ahead and get to the real good right now. Is there any chance that three guys make this all? Otto Lopez is going to be in the All-Star game. I know C.J. Abrams most likely is going to be the starting shortstop. Max Meyer has got to be a slam dunk for the All-Star game. What about Liam Hicks? That would be my third guy, maybe not your third guy to get in. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the All-Star, everyone complains about it. The way that the All-Star game works is, you know, obviously the fans vote the players in. So that's the first thing. And so we understand at this point, based on what the voting looks like, the Marlins probably will not have a fan-voted in player unless something changes significantly.
Correct.
It's just the nature of the game. The markets are huge with some of these teams, and that's the deal. You know, so beyond that, you know, you look at the teams around the league, and yes, performances are important, but it's also, you know, worth noting the Marlins are a .500 team. So can they have four or five guys in? I mean, statistically, they could if you added Edwards, but it's just not likely. So
No. The
path for them to get three, Joe, I would say, would be what generally happens in the All-Star game, which is a million guys decide not to play right before the game. And so I think that would be the path for Hicks, where we're 48 hours out, all of a sudden a player decides to not play, something
right
along those lines. So I would say you're spot on. I would guarantee Otto Lopez is part of the game. I would almost guarantee Max Meyer is part of the game. And then Hicks would have a shot if there would be a dropout of some kind, would be my guess. That's his path to get in.
All right, so let's get into some of the stuff. And always, you know, we trade for prospects and they become good players, and you wonder how they're going to look in year two or after – they get to see the league through one time, and now everybody's kind of figured this thing out. And I'm talking specifically about center field and right field with Marcy and Casey. I know they're coming off games with home runs and stuff, but 202 and 209, as good as they've been defensively, and they both got game-winning catches, in my opinion, one at home for Casey and the catch Marcy made in the right to center field gap makes a beautiful catch with the bases loaded. But you got to do more, right? How long can you stick with this hitting .200 thing?
Right. It's a great question. And look, Marcy was phenomenal last year. My understanding, Joe, is that his defense is just so good that it's impossible to take him out. And okay. So if this team is not going to slug generally, I know they hit 5 home runs the other day, but generally speaking, if they're not going to hit a ton of home runs, then the number one topic and the number one attribute for the Marlins is going to have to be DRS, defensive runs saved, runs prevention.
Right.
And so they simply can't afford, Joe, to put somebody out there who, let's say, is offensively a little bit better than Marcy, but a lot worse on defense. He's been fantastic in center field all season long. He's getting to everything. And so to answer that question, Joe, I think they're just going to ride this out. Whatever the offensive numbers are, certainly they can – you know, take him out against some left-handed pitching and bat him at the bottom of the lineup, which they have done recently. But I see him staying. I don't see anything changing there. As far as Owen Casey is concerned, I think that you're going to just continue to see him play against right-handed pitching, and that's it. I do think that they think there's a lot more in there, but there's a ton of swing and miss. It's hard to correct those things in the midst of a season. Remember, right. They got their first look at him in spring training. And so I think he's another player similar to Marcy that they'll ride it out, but you'll only see him against right-handed pitching the rest of the way.
Yeah, and listen, these guys, they'd love to see these guys be part of the future, right? These are two guys that they would really like. Marcy hit 290 last year, and you're going, oh, my God, he's good, as you said, so good in center field. And then Owen Casey was so good in the World Baseball Classic, you know, like, holy smokes. And he got off to a great start. But, again, one thing about this league, man, once they figure out how to get you out, you get a heavy dose of it, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, the advanced scouting in baseball is better than any other sport. That's unequivocal.
I mean,
you can watch totally all the football tape and basketball tape you want, but you're seeing pitches and speeds and arm angles and launch angles. It's just incredible the way that they will figure you out quick.
Hey, Kyle Stowers playing first base. Boy, I love that Kyle Stowers. I know it was one game, the same game we're talking about, the 12-run game. But what's your take of him playing first base? And is his days in the outfield done? What do you think the future is for Kyle Stowers, who's also off to a real slow start after an injury?
Yeah, I don't think that his days in the outfield are done. I think that he probably won't even be the primary first baseman, Joe. He'll get a lot of time there. You know, the other name, too, I think that's going to get some time there coming up next week is Griffin Conine. He's about to come back here. And so I think the two of them and Connor Norby, you know, to me, Joe, the second half of the season, which we're fast approaching here, believe it or not, we're almost at 81 games, circle that guy. Like, I think that's the one, to me, that seemingly may get it together, starting to show a lot more power, hit a couple of home runs in Philadelphia. He's starting to slug. I do think that there's a very big second half of the season coming from him. Some of the other names you mentioned, I'm not so sure. But based on what I'm seeing lately, I'm starting to get more confident that whatever was really bothering him in April, and I know he didn't play, he's starting to figure it out a little bit more. He's not missing fastballs anymore, too. That's the key, too. He's catching up to those as well. So for Miami to stay in this thing in the second half and fight, he's got to be a big part of it.
Well, listen, we're going to talk about the pitching, but before we do, man, calling Joe Mack up, he has been everything and more of what I thought. What about for you so far catching?
Yeah, the Marlins are very lucky on this one. Like, this is one that looks like, you know, he could be a catcher and play in the big leagues for a long time. The last guy that we had, Real Muto, ended up, you know, being a 2-time Gold Glove Award winner and a fantastic player for Philadelphia. I mean, I think Joe Mack is every bit of that. I don't know that he's got the same offense that JT had or the same speed, but he definitely throws guys out at a better rate than anybody is doing over the last month. He's got this incredible pop time, which is under 2 seconds. So every time he pops up and throws, it's faster than anybody. He's coming out. He's verbal. He's daring guys to run, basically, Joe. He hit a home run against the lefty. You know, the offense is going to get there. But, you know, the other thing that's starting to happen here, too, I feel like he's on a team that's kind of quiet. I feel like he's starting to become a little bit of a team leader. I think going into next year, you could have that sort of leadership coming from that position. So you're 100% right. This has been a major bright spot for them this year in Joe Mack.
I know Liam Hicks is still catching certain guys. What happens to Ramirez in the minor league? Because it wasn't too long ago we were talking about Ramirez's power. He's just got to get better defensively, but we love his potential numbers. And I'm like, wow, where's he going to find a place even if he's hitting well in the minor leagues? What do they do?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that right now because he certainly is not as good as Joe Mack. No. Really not close. No. So, you know, could they potentially tinker with first base or another position? As of right now, they continue to catch him. And with if that is the way that they're going to go about it, then I don't know that you would see him in the big leagues until the end of the season. Let's also remember that the reason Joey's in the minor leagues, yes, partly because of the defense, but he also was not hitting. No. And you know, if you hit, they'll find a spot for you somewhere on this team.
Yeah, no, power is big right now in this in the new league of baseball. Yeah. Power,
yeah,
power so, over so everything.
They're going to have to sort it out. I really don't know the answer to it, but it would seemingly be either DH or first base. But Joe, this guy's too young to be a DH, so they have to figure some position out for him.
You know, we've had some good pitching rotations. We have through the years, and we get rid of some guys, and they've been really good in some other places through the years. How does Alcantara Perez, when healthy, and he's on his way back, and now the way Max Meyers pitched for a 1-2-3, it's still not deep enough position overall, but for a 1-2-3, how do you like it?
Sandy looks somewhere in between his Cy Young season and last year. You know, I think he's still great, but I certainly don't think he's anywhere near what he was last year, especially right in that first half, which was disastrous. So I think we set these expectations so high. Once a player wins a Cy Young, there's a reason why you don't win two. You know, anybody that's basically won two Cy Youngs pretty much in the Hall of Fame. So, look, he's arguably the best Marlins pitcher of all time at this point. From a legacy perspective, he's there too. And I think he looks right now back to close to where he was, say, prior to that Cy Young Award season. I'm not going to throw Cy Young Award there again.
Right,
it's just not fair. As far as Yuri Perez is concerned, it was a really freak injury. They didn't think he'd be back until July. I believe he's going to have another rehab start before he comes back. He looks so good. It feels like he could come back and play Texas next week. But I think there'll be another one there. And you mentioned Max Meyer. You're right, Joe. The key is you can't roll with three starters for 3 months. It can't be.
No.
So, you know, Phillips, they've been throwing him. He's done a pretty good job lately, had a blip. Same thing with Ryan Gusto. Tonight they'll have Lake Bacher. By the way, the game tonight, for those interested in watching, is also going to be on CBS4. So it's free, simulcast over the air tonight for those watching.
Oh,
so,
man, I'm glad you said that. I did not know that. That's right.
Yeah, free game tonight. So everybody
like
watching, check it out.
Yeah
on CBS4. Lake Bacher's opening tonight. But, yeah, Joe, this is something. Even Clayton McCall, the manager, addressed it. He said, look, I can roll with openers here for a few weeks or a month, but it's really hard to do for a whole season. So they'll have to pivot in some way eventually.
How's our minor league system look for more? We spent years talking about prospects coming up and when they're ready and coach them up and get them ready. And do we still look pretty good in the minor leagues?
Seems to be okay. Major injury this year, unfortunately, to their top pitching prospect, Thomas White. So we're going to have to wait another season for him. Remember, Robbie Snelling came up. That was their other top prospect. Right. He got hurt. He's going to miss a year. So it seems like their best prospect is their first-round pick from last year, Iva Arquette, who is seemingly getting it together in the minor leagues. He missed some time with an injury, projects as a middle infielder. Again, we'll probably see him in big league camp next year. He'd be one. Dylan Lewis is another player they got from the Yankees in the trade that they made with them, and Lewis has hit a lot of home runs there. So they have a few guys, Joe. I wouldn't say they have a ton in terms of their farm system. I still think they're in the top 10 in baseball. The most grading systems have them somewhere in the top 12, top 15. I think they can be top 10. I don't know that you're going to see a huge impact from players this year. The only one that's kind of knocking on the door is this kid Carson Milbrandt, who they drafted several years ago. He's been one of the very best pitchers in the minor leagues, Joe. What I would recommend is he'll pitch in this futures game coming up at the All-Star game. He's going to be invited, and I'm sure he will pitch in that, so everyone will get a good look at him then.
Hey, Craig, man, we spend so much time with the Dolphins and their problems talking about leadership, and I always wonder, because I've heard through the years, hey, great clubhouse, hey, not so good. We got a couple of guys that are pain in the ass. It's caused problems. How's the leadership, and who is – you're around the team all the time. I'm always curious, just looking at their personalities on TV, who's kind of the leader of the team or two or three leaders of the team as you look at it?
Well, everybody respects Sandy and understands that he is the elder statesman, but he leads by example. He's not a huge vocal guy, but when he talks, everybody listens. So I think that you just, first of all, put him at the top as far as, you know, if something is going to be led in the clubhouse and this guy is going to speak, everyone is going to pay attention. I think on the offensive side, as far as the bats are concerned, I mean, that guy to me going into the season would have absolutely been Kyle Stowers. But, Joe, he missed so much time in spring training. And then in April, it's when a guy's not on the field, it's
hard
to
be
hard
the
to
man.
That,
but totally agree. I'm glad you said
it
that.
Is,
yeah.
It is. You got to, even if you're not performing, I think you got to be on the field to be the man. And Stowers, to his credit, is now, I think, performing like that guy again. So to answer your question, I do think it is him. They have a lot of guys, Joe, that aren't really vocal, that sort of lead by example. But I'm not going to discount what Sandy means to the team, because when he does get up and speak, it just goes silent. And so to me, there's a respect factor there. And so I would use him, but he's not this, rah-rah, go get him guy. It's just not who his personality.
You know who looks like they've got a little something to him, man? Just a little cockiness. And Max Meyer never changes. He just like, all right, runners on first and second, no problem. I'm getting your ass out. That's just a, like, nothing never gets too high, too low. Just looks like he's ready to just kick your ass right now. Tell me about Max Meyer.
Max Meyer, we could go on for days here about how this guy annoys me to no end, Max Meyer. So the last time I was doing the sideline, we made a deal. Me and Max made a deal. I said, listen, what will it take for you to do a post-game interview after a game, man? Like, literally, he's not done one all season long. Like, he does the interviews, Joe. He won't come back on the field, you know, like, they, you know, when they win, they come out and talk. He's like, all right, look, if I go seven shutout innings, I'm going to come out and I'll do it with you. I'm like, all right, fine, no problem. That's the deal. So he goes against the Braves. He throws seven innings. He gives up two runs. He strikes out like 10, and he doesn't do it. And I'm like, buddy, like, he's like, I told you seven shutout innings. I'm only doing it if it's seven shutout innings. So, Joe, I got to go back in the clubhouse today. I'm on the sideline again tomorrow. Oh. And I got to ask him, what is the deal, man? Are you going to do it? Like, he is the toughest guy. Like, he's
That's
not
funny.
Kevin Brown, Joe. He's not that. But, like, he's the closest to that, you know? Like, he's so locked in. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to do it. And meanwhile, he's the funniest guy. He's a happy
He is
guy.
A locked-in cat, man. I see it on TV. It's so funny. I can't believe it. Great story. Yeah, man, sure. Just keep pitching. And by the way, you're probably going to lose him, because if this thing continues, he ain't going to change anything, including doing an interview with you. But I love knowing
yeah,
you.
You know what?
You're not going to give up, though, so I know that.
I said, Joe, I said, Max, you do realize that you have to, like, speak at the All-Star game. He's like, well, forget it then. Forget it. I'm not going. I'm like, you are going. You're going to the All-Star game.
Hey, Craig, thank you, man. I really appreciate you spending time with us. Thanks, man.
Of course, Joe, anytime.
All right, Craig Mitz, Sports Grid host and pregame, postgame for Marlins TV as well, so we've got more stuff to get to. Yeah, man, Max just looks like he's about business, man. He's about business. Yeah, those guys sometimes aren't big on doing those interviews after the game, and they are superstitious, man.